nothing else comes close.
Leo's last full day as a duck. We will find out in due time. It's another beauty in Buffalo, going up to 84 today. Welcome inside in our Sabres Live studio at KeyBank Center with Marty and Brian.
I'm busy.
Are you?
Yep.
What are you doing? Because I know what you're doing.
Yeah. So you peeked on my computer. I'm designing the New York Islanders' third jersey right now, being one of the 30,000. But we'll talk about it later. We got
Dazzled and Disturbed. Yes. We will. Yes.
Yeah. Later in the show. But if you want it while you're watching, get your computer out and see what you can do with the New York Islanders contest. It can earn you a VIP package and a signed jersey.
You said we were going to talk about it later, and now you've emptied the tank.
Because there's been some great suggestions that we'll discuss later.
Great. When are you going to rein in great?
Well, there are some really good ones.
Are there? Okay.
Yeah.
unfortunate news to start, and that was delayed, and then he had surgery. Connor Bedard. Yeah. I mean, we've been waiting and hoping that it wasn't going to be something terrible based on the spill that he took during summer workouts within the last week. But he has now had shoulder surgery and is out for approximately 4 months. He is still without a contract, and he is one of the big-name RFAs, needing a new deal. The health is the most important thing. So let's start with that, how it impacts Bedard, based on the fact his other shoulder was injured in season last year, where he's at in his career, and ultimately how this impacts everything for he and the Hawks.
So this is a left shoulder injury. You could see, like, when he comes off the ice, he's grabbing his left shoulder. It's hanging down low. Last year was a right shoulder injury. Like, for me, I never had shoulder injuries, but I've played with a lot of players that have experienced shoulder injuries, and when they start happening, it takes time, right? You have to be, so they're saying 4 months. He's not going to be fully engaged, healthy, probably for another year. Like, if ever, right? Like, let's go back to, I remember playing with Eric Rasmussen. As soon as Eric Rasmussen got shoulder issues, it was done. Like, it just, he couldn't hit. He couldn't play his game. He became basically a bottom, and I'm not saying Connor Bedard is going to be a bottom six or a fourth line guy, but that's what happened to Eric Rasmussen, who was a first-round pick of the Buffalo Sabres and really skilled player. But the shoulders went, and then everything else really followed. And for Connor Bedard, this is troublesome. Now, if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, you're going to sign him. You're not going to wait until December, right? You're not going to wait until November. You're going to sign him. He's going to go to IR, and everything will be fine. They have plenty of cap space. But it's just it puts a question mark on the future. What is Connor Bedard going to look like in 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now? Is it going to be a Jack Hughes situation where Jack Hughes has missed a lot of time because of injuries to his shoulders? So I think it's worrisome for the Chicago Blackhawks that your first overall pick from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, now has both shoulders have had issues over the last few years.
Does it impact how others around the league view him in the form of a potential offer sheet?
Yes, 100%. I mean, you're not going to offer sheet Connor Bedard right now, not knowing exactly what he's going to look like. And if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, maybe you're not even looking at a long-term deal. Maybe you're saying, listen, we're going to give you a two-year deal and see where you are after. Now, he doesn't have to sign this, and he can. But I'm just saying it may change the approach here. Mm-hmm. And look, maybe the Blackhawks want to do right by Connor Bedard and say, we're going to give you the contract that we've been talking about. I'm sure they've had negotiations. But some GMs would say, things have changed. And you know what? If things had changed for us, you would be, as a player, doing the same thing, readjusting on the fly. Maybe we have to readjust on the fly.
Well, tough for Bo Byram, obviously, in the sense that he's going in there, was hoping to have that immediate connection with Connor Bedard so they could have an elite power play, start the season flying.
That is a full-on blow.
What's that?
That's a full-on blow to Bo Byram, thinking like, hey, I want to be first power play guy.
And he will be, obviously.
Yeah, but without Connor Bedard, correct, that's not as many points and not as many goals and as much success.
No, and even a healthy Chicago team on paper still looks a long way from being postseason bound or anywhere near championship material. Of course, the Rochester Americans will start this season up against the reigning Calder Cup champions in the Toronto Marlies. This has been announced. It will be their home opener on Friday, October 2nd at Blue Cross Arena, and they will be staring at someone other than John Gruden behind the Marlies bench, obviously, as he got the promotion to Toronto.
Yes, and one of the assistants that was on the Toronto bench, Steve Sullivan, is now going to be the head coach of the Toronto Marlies. Mark Giordano has also been elevated to assistant coach with the Marlies, joining a staff that was kind of like, well, they're in place, obviously, after their win, but they needed a head coach, and they brought in Giordano as an assistant. He was part of the organization, but not as a on the bench with the team.
Amherst have the forward reinforcements this year in the form of veterans, Matthew Pekka, Aiden McDonough, Jason Pollan, among the new group that will be under Michael Leone as he coaches into his third season with the Amherst. Again, the home opener, and more information, obviously, at Amherst.com. But that season kicks off on October 2nd, and there's still looking for an assistant coach, right?
They are still looking, but when we talked to Michael Leone last week during Dev Camp, they said they were down to the last few interviews here. I would anticipate an announcement probably made in the next week or so when it comes to the Rochester Americans and having a second assistant coach. Obviously, Vinny Prospo leaving to the St. Louis Blues. So Nathan Page is one assistant, but they're looking for somebody to maybe take in some of the responsibilities that Vinny had with the power play, the forward group, and wearing the full equipment at practice is a definite requisite for the job.
Oh, speaking of equipment, the Amherst are hosting a garage sale.
I saw that.
This Saturday from 11 to 2. So follow them on social and get all the details on that. Because that's hilarious. You tied in Vinny and his gearing up. And
there
like,
may be some Vinny Prospo left over in that. But I, for fans, it's always a great opportunity to, well, maybe get some piece of equipment of your favorite players. But also, if you are, you know, a parent that's looking for gear for your son or daughter, and, you know, you want to maybe get some high-end equipment, but not the high-end price that you pay in the stores, like, this could be an opportunity.
Okay, opportunity, obviously, for Philadelphia when they saw that Leo Carlson could be offer-sheeted. Mm-hmm. They jumped at it, 5 years, $90 million. We're basically into the last 24 hours now before the decision gets made.
Did they announce it at 12:56 again today?
Yesterday, or they beat the they came in at the under, like 12:23.
Barrett Hayton came in under, which was great for us. We didn't talk much about it. It just, you know, it's a weird situation. But Leo Carlson, I think the Anaheim Ducks are going to take their full 7 days and push it under the limit.
Yeah, and obviously then if the Ducks retain and we talk about Bedard's injury and then the other RFAs who are out there, it's different for Jason Robertson, obviously, because he's filed for arbitration. And but the Fantillis of the world, like,
you can still trade for Jason
Robertson.
Oh, no, I know,
but I'm just saying, like,
because
you know, the bubbling under this Carlson surface story is obviously, like, what would Philly do next? And whether it's Fantilli or whether they go a trade route or whatever.
They are going to, I guess, and this is the thing, we had Danny Briere on the show at the Combine.
Yes.
And I talked to a couple of reporters yesterday. They wanted to know a little bit more about Danny and all of that. And I explained to them, I'm like, he was sitting here in this seat on this microphone saying there's always players available. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently, he was asked about using offer sheet as a tool, and he kind of just did the GM speech, like, ah, it's a tool that we could use. But he did say, we need a number one center, and we are going to fill that spot. If it's not Leo Carlson, they are going to look for a number one center somewhere around the league.
Well, let's play this game. Where will they be next season? I have a list. Producer Sam has given / gifted us this list, making it easy to follow along, which sometimes for me is hard. Dylan Larkin, where will he be next season?
He's better widen the list. Apparently, he's given now Dallas a shot.
We don't need multiples. Just tell me where he's going to be next season.
I think he will be in.
Start keeping track
now.
Yeah,
keep
that I've
track
got a
big, of this.
Yeah, I've got a big book now.
So. I think he will be in Dallas.
Wow. Good luck.
Dallas is going to be starting to swing now.
Jason Robertson is going to be where next season?
Jason Robertson is going to be. Oh, that is a tough one. I am going to say.
I hope we're not on a clock here.
The Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, I'm going Pittsburgh as well. Connor Hellebuck.
I want to say Buffalo. I've said Buffalo all along, but I'm starting to think that it's not going to happen. I've been so many people asking me, the Sabres going to get Connor Hellebuck. I'm like,
are you
wavering before the draft?
Here?
Yes. But now I'm starting to think, like, I don't know if it's going to happen. I think Connor Hellebuck, it's either Buffalo or Winnipeg. Put Buffalo down. Just we'll see what happens.
I'll put Winnipeg in brackets. Patrick Kane.
Patrick Kane. Same thing here. I say
Winnipeg?
Buffalo or back to Chicago.
What? What?
They need a guy now that Connor Bedard is going to be gone for 4 months. They need to replace like some of that spot maybe on the top power play. And it would be like one of those like, hey, farewell tour, come back to Chicago, enjoy
Edmonton?
It. And I don't see him wanting to go to Edmonton.
Okay. Logan Stanley.
Logan Stanley is going to go to Seattle. Because their fans are like embarrassed to be fans right now. Nobody wants to go to Seattle. Logan Stanley will go to Seattle.
Anthony, this one is still hard to believe.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, big year last year with the Penguins. Anthony Mantha.
Okay. Anthony Mantha, I think, is going to end up in Detroit.
Ooh, his original stomping grounds.
Yeah, exactly. And okay. He's played to that level now that maybe they would say, oh, yeah, this is why we got you originally.
Vladimir Tarasenko.
Tarasenko, St. Louis.
I think Edmonton.
Oh, yeah, that could be true.
Patrick Laine.
Finland.
Really?
I don't see anybody giving him a contract this year. I don't see anybody, like, right now saying we're going to give Patrick Laine a deal.
Why?
I think there is too many red flags. The health is a big concern. So I think Montreal took a swing.
Yeah.
It worked for a little bit, but
it did.
No.
Especially on the power play. He was pretty dynamic.
We saw that
the Sabres were on the wrong end of it many times in the midst of a stretch where they, you know, really started seeing what Montreal was all about. And obviously now that's kind of been like 3-4 years running, the Sabre Corps and the Montreal Corps and what we witnessed in this year's Stanley Cup playoffs.
Patrick Laine could have gone to Washington if Ovechkin wouldn't have re-signed, but now they have that guy back. So in a year from now, maybe it's Washington.
Well, Washington may be one of the teams here, although this is always tricky because words matter.
Okay.
But the verbiage is, who will be next year's Sabres / surprise team to make the jump? Now, so you can look at this a few ways. Sometimes, like San Jose last year, you can be the most improved team in the NHL and still not make the playoffs. I think for all of us, if you're trying to tie it in with the Sabres, to me, the surprise element last year was not that they finally made the playoffs. They were the best team in the NHL from December into April. That is still shocking to me that they could have been that good for that long. So when you think about it that way, who's next year's surprise team?
So I did this in a few different ways, Duffer. One is I said, well, the Sabres were seventh in the Atlantic the year before, and they won the Atlantic last year. So, well, which team was seventh in the Atlantic last year? It was the Florida Panthers. I'm thinking, you know what? Florida has a chance to win. They have a chance to do exactly what the Sabres did. Would that be a surprise? No. But who would be the Sabres next year? Team that finished seventh in the Atlantic and wins the Atlantic? Florida could do that. Now I said, okay, well, let me take it another step. A team that maybe did not make the playoffs, had a good year, but I feel could win the Eastern Conference, can win the Metropolitan Division, that's the Washington Capitals. The work that they've done, obviously, adding Tuck and Kyrou and others and Ovechkin coming back, I think Washington could be that. But a surprise team, in a sense, a team that is good, but I think is going to make a major jump this year, is the Utah Mammoth. I look at the work that they've done. Their team is different. They've added Trocheck. They've added other pieces. They've added Trouba in defense. I'm looking at the Utah Mammoth as the team that would be a bit of a surprise.
They did not add Trouba on defense.
No, who did they add on defense?
Andrew Peak.
Andrew Peak. No, who added Trouba on defense?
That would be Northern California, dude.
That would be San Jose. Yes. That's why I was going to pick San Jose. I had Trouba in my head, but I didn't want to pick San Jose. You know why?
You see what the offseason is good for?
Yes, it's for a reminder of that we are often wrong with what we're saying. I had Trouba in my head because I wanted to put San Jose there. But again, I'm like, San Jose, I don't know that for me it would be a surprise. Like, I'm looking at a team that's under the radar that can come through, and Utah is why they came through.
What you were wanting to impart to our audience was that they
Anders
not
Lee,
right.
Vincent
it was
Trocheck,
Anders Lee,
yeah,
not
Anders Lee and Trocheck, yes.
were the big pieces, along with retaining Barrett Hayton, obviously, and continuing to
and
build.
And they got Sebastian Kosa in net, which will have maybe an impact with
it
the
should.
With Pamelka.
100%. Yeah.
So to me, Utah is that surprise team. Like, if you ask people who's a team out west you think is going to have success, that's going to be like maybe a Omice advantage in the first round.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot of people are going to say Utah. People are going to say Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota. They're going to say the Oilers, the Vegas Golden Knights. But Utah comes in, maybe even San Jose. But I think Utah could be that surprise team. No Jacob Trouba.
Utah is still, I mean, I'm glad that they are as aggressively pursuing excellence in their early stages here. I think it would surprise many, however, after this playoff appearance, that, like, they had 92 points last year. That's not a lot.
Washington missed the playoff with 95 in the
and
East.
And the year before, Utah had 89. So, basically, I struggle to even call that progress. They just happened to end up in the playoffs. So, they need to have some sort of dynamic
to 105,
break.
Exactly. Like,
and I mean, I like what you said about the goaltending. I would not have them, though, as that team. I think for me, and maybe it's not a huge surprise because they had a big jump last year, and this is all still hinging on what transpires in the next 24 hours, but I think the Philadelphia Flyers could win the Metro if they get Carlson.
And I just think it's hard with Carolina and with Washington being in that Metropolitan Division. I feel like Philly finishes third again. They may be a better team, but they'll finish third again in the Metro.
Do you ever wonder about producer Sam's, I don't want to say integrity.
Depend. Are we talking about Missouri football or what are we talking about?
Sam has Ottawa and LA as two teams in this category. Yet Sam continually raises an eyebrow to us every time the Sens have higher odds than the Sabres. What side of the is he on both sides of the Senator fence? And is that not political posturing? Isn't every senator at any given time
lobbying
on either side of the
you
fence?
You lived in Ottawa. You know
he's
what
a
that's
political
like.
Assassin out there, this guy.
You know what that's like. Living in Ottawa,
right?
You know, being that it is the capital of Canada, the Parliament. It's
gosh.
We could be good, we could be bad, we could not knowing. I don't see Ottawa in that, but I could see LA being a team that
they can't. We're going to dive in with LA on Shayna Goldman.
Listen, they had 90 points last year and made the playoffs.
Yeah,
can they get to 98 or 100, which would be a significant jump for me?
Average age 36.2. I highly doubt it. Time for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Oh, great designer and beloved Islander alum, take us through your first dazzled of the day.
Well, my dazzled is some of the ideas that the 30,000 plus have submitted. And if you want to have fun, it's like designing goalie equipment. You have like your templates and you add. So these are like five of the design that producer Sam's has retained. And I'll tell you this, the lighthouse one on the left is fantastic. A little cream base to the jersey, some of the teal and the orange that reflects the fisherman Islanders. I That's my favorite. And then my second favorite is the bottom right. Another lighthouse logo, but a little bit more blue, some gray to it. So that's kind of where I was going with my design. I won't show you my design because right now it has the number 26. Who reminds you of the number 26 on the New York Islanders? Matt Molson. So I'm like, why did they put 26 on that jersey? I get it's for the 26
season. I'm glad you answered
it
before I could answer.
But it is like makes me think of my former teammate Matt Molson with the Islanders. So, but my jersey's pretty good.
Right I have now. A new dazzled.
What is it?
I just got a text saying, yes, I do wonder about producer Sam's integrity.
Look, I'll show you on the camera right now. This is my design. It's
that looks
not
terrible.
Bad.
Tilt the screen, dude.
I don't know which way it needs to go. There. A little better.
But okay. Anyway. Why don't you tweet it out? It'll be easier for people to capture.
Man, I don't want to enter. I don't want to win a VIP.
Don't you get VIP status with your alumni
card? I get
card?
Alumni status, not VIP status.
Okay. This or that. What's greater,
VIP status
or alumni status?
Well, if you're Brian Trocchi and you know some of the big time alumni,
hey,
that's
that was
good.
Never that wasn't always the case.
It wasn't when I played for the Islanders; they were not around.
Right,
they were not
despite
around.
Being
Mike
one of the
Bossy
great, right.
was not allowed, was not around, and then it changed. And obviously, that's for the better. Michael Pekka does get very good alumni status with the Islanders. I'll tell you this. He's at every event in the summertime. He loves to go. Knows the ownership family. He's good with
Real
that.
Quick, dazzled. Ian McKay, playoff yes. MVP, two springs ago for the Bandits, or finals MVP, I should say, as the Bandits capped a three-peat. McKay is in the fold for three more years.
Yes, and that is a big signing for me because he is one of those key players to the team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. He plays with grit. He scores. He's physical. He's a leader, and obviously part of a three-peat. And
he's a blast on social media.
Man,
you should follow
good.
Him because
yes.
from his golf standpoint.
He's been great on this show, too. We've had fun with him.
His ever-improving golf game is documented regularly on social.
Shayna, and before Shayna comes in, I want her just, she sent me a text. She's not through with the first women's semifinal at Wimbledon. No spoilers. And she's not on social right now because she doesn't want to get what's going on.
Yeah.
So she's not through with the first semifinal.
We're through with the first segment. Shayna Goldman is next on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Schedule comes out next week. I would implore you to gather a large group to watch the Ducks when they come to town. And we want you in groups of 10 or more. It's group ticketing experiences. You save on box office pricing, get access to exclusive experiences. You can learn all about it at sabres.com/groups. Quack. Quack. We beat the deadline again. We had breaking news on Sabres Live 2 days in a row, and Shayna Goldman's here to digest with us the Ducks ahead of schedule, matching the offer sheet, retaining Leo Carlson, 5 years, $90 million. Hi, Shayna.
Hi. I know, we're getting news. This summer's fun. Who thought on July 9th we would have something so interesting to talk about?
And we're getting it before 1 p.m. Eastern, which is when we're off the air, so we get to talk about it. But, okay, so the press release, I told Duffer, by the way, no spoilers, and you're probably not on social media, so I'm trying to...
Yeah, Mom, do not disturb still.
Do not disturb.
We're almost
That's
there.
Great. There's tennis to be caught up to. But so the ownership group of the Anaheim Ducks, they put a release and said that Pat Verbeek has intelligently left us with enough cap space to sign Leo. Is that the worst line in all publication you've read? Because they don't have enough cap space to sign Carter Gauthier now because they opened the door to have Leo get $18 million per year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't expect them to say Pat left us with little cap space to do anything because he didn't handle his RFAs ahead of schedule like every team is doing for good reason. Yes. Pat Verbeek threatens to match all offer sheets and does it while shooting himself in the foot. We can't say that. So, yes, he intelligently.
The NHL was doing this release a la the Babcock thing. While being cast in a less than favorable light, Pat Verbeek has managed to get the Leo Carlson situation done.
We'll leave out all of the details. Just like the Columbus era never happened for Babcock and is not in the release because he was never coached there. Okay, so for this situation, all of the contracts that were put forth before he accepted the offer sheet didn't happen because they weren't signed.
Yeah, like A.J. Greer and many others with the Ducks that they did. Okay, so what's next then? What's next for the Ducks? Like, they have Cutter Gauthier that's there. He's not eligible for an offer sheet because of the weird, like, status that he is.
10.2.
So, so what's next? Like, he wants more than the 7.5, 8 million.
They have 9 million.
Nine million in cap space. Like, he'll want more than the 9 in cap space. And you can go over 10% in the summertime, but what's next for the Anaheim Ducks now?
Yeah, they're going to have to move out salary, and it's going to be some of those like aging contracts, like the Alex Killorns of the world. And this is why this whole situation is problematic from day one, right? Like, there's a reason teams take a proactive approach with their players so you can beat market prices and you can also beat the potential of an offer sheet. And I get why we don't see them often. There's a reason there's always that threat. And I think we've been seeing it more and more, and it kind of led to this moment. We all knew this could happen, and here it does. It's the other contracts. It's that they worked on the fringes of their lineup before they felt the need to deal with their core players, because some general managers don't view RFAs as free agents because they retain their rights, right? And then they kind of like throw the hammer at them and expect them to take less. The AJ Greer contract in a vacuum isn't the worst thing in the world, but it is the trifecta of term, money, and some sort of trade protection, which you don't need to do for a fourth line player. But this is why you don't spend that kind of money anywhere else until your core players are set up. And you look at what the Sabres did. The first move they make is making sure Zach Benson has his extension. It comes in below market value. It looks like a great deal. And now you know what you have for the rest of their lineup. So since they did this backwards, and since they're now in a bind because they didn't want to give Leo Carlson 13, 14, I don't know, 15 million that it was reported that, you know, the Ducks turned down before he accepted this offer sheet, you now have to start making subtractions and then find replacements on a budget. So Killorn is definitely that easy target to make, but you would just think maybe if you never signed the AJ Greer contract, you wouldn't have had to start, you know, shaving off dollars before you even get Gauthier signed. So I think that's going to be the big thing here, because now you have the overpayment for Carlson, which is understandable, the overpayment for Minchikov, and I think they just lost all leverage in that situation, that now they need to find a way to start moving out salaries so they can still sign one more defenseman and, you know, lock up that very important winger.
Well, the other A wrinkle with the Ducks, obviously, is the injury to Troy Terry. And, you know, if he's on long term,
they save seven.
They save seven, which gives you
Long term without playoff return would save seven.
Right.
Just long term would save like probably like six or something. Yeah.
So, and I think that's probably the better move, right? Because it's not like some super, super, super long term injury. It's he'll miss some time.
Right. But it's also problematic, not unlike Bedard, not being healthy for the start of the season. Like, this Ducks team, for all the things they've gone through here in the offseason, are not going to have Troy Terry healthy at the start of the year, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, there's an awful lot of pressure here on the remaining players to find a way to maintain. I don't know how they improve upon what they did last year. Do you?
No, I don't think they're going to be much better. It's going to be relying on internal growth. And obviously with the younger team, you can do that a little bit more than, say, if you're, I don't know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Florida Panthers, right? Like, if you're a team of veterans, you can't rely on, like, what if these players glow up and develop into difference makers? Like, in Anaheim, you can. And especially when you look at what happened last year, how they hit that wall in, like, December, January, and everything kind of fell off the rails. If the young players aren't struggling through that, and I think the veterans were a big part of the problem, but I digress, you know, if Leo Carlson doesn't hit that wall, that's very important for them, right? And if Beckett Seneca can take the next steps.
But he wasn't playing goal. Their goaltending went, like, through two horrific stretches last year, like,
I mean, Lucas Dostal returned to a different team. Like, they totally stopped defending when he came back. And it's like, I went through and watched all the goals against, because I know, like, public models were saying, like, well, his, you know, goal saved above expected is terrible. And it was. But you look at, like, the pre-shot movement and some of the passes they were allowing, and you're like, my goodness, that is why you're in this position. So it helps that their defense is going to look different, right? Like, losing Trouba isn't necessarily a bad thing for them. Losing Gudas at this point in his career when he has lost a step, not the worst in the world. It would have helped to have John Carlson to have that second offensive defenseman. Now you are investing in Minchikov to become that. I think losing Zellweger, though, is the step back. That was a really big one. I know his minutes went down last year and they didn't trust him as much, but you look at how much has already had to change and how few players they're really able to bring in because they start with their fourth line. And you're like, okay, now you might have a little bit of an issue here. I feel like they need to find a way to keep relying on entry-level talent to kind of balance the scales, right? And that's what worked for Anaheim and Philly in this situation of they both have good prospect pools. So if you're going to overpay Carlson, you can offset it with that. But how many young players are you going to bring in? You don't want to, you know, speed up their timelines now to match yours if they aren't ready for it. So it just, it's going to be a lot of pressure on the coaching staff to make sure everybody takes a step forward, because now you don't have that leeway. When we looked at the offseason and go, $45 million in cap space, they should have all the money in the world to lock up their players early and then get to work. Yep. Now all of a sudden it's just locking up their own players and figuring ways to replace subtractions on such a tight budget.
So now that it's matched, the Carlson deal in Anaheim, what are we expecting next across the league, offer sheets, otherwise?
I still am looking at someone like Fantilli. I wonder if a team can try to send that ridiculous offer his way. Also, if I'm a team, I know Connor Bedard's injured. I am still throwing an offer at him, knowing the Blackhawks will match, just to mess up their cap picture, right?
Because I agree. 100%.
Why not?
I firmly do, Shane. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, because you look at the Ducks situation now. Again, ton of cap space going into the offseason. Look how quickly it's gone. This is a team that's turning the corner and jumping into the playoff race and is going to be knocking someone else out, right? More likely these veteran teams. And especially you look at the East, how competitive it's getting and how many teams are in the wild card race for both sides here. If you can do something that will hamstring a team that is turning the corner, you need to try to do it. At worst, you get Connor Bedard. You get Adam Fantilli. Those are great players to have. And even if you lose 4 first-round picks, if you think you're a playoff team, those picks aren't as valuable, right? It's totally different than, say, the Blackhawks saying, we're going to leverage 4 first-round picks, because, like, I would want at least 2 or 3 of those. I don't think you're there yet. But if you're a playoff team and you're thinking late 20s picks, who cares? Because what are the chances you're going to find that franchise-caliber center with one of those draft picks? And at worst, you mess up someone else's cap books, and now they can't take the steps that they plan to. So I'd want to see more of that, and I wouldn't even mind seeing Philly now kind of see what else is out there, because at the end of the day, this is a team that has made the playoffs. They are right there. Their roster is very good. They have some very team-friendly contracts, like Tyson Forrester just extended. They still are missing that 1C, so I want to see them just keep creating chaos to try to find that center of their dreams.
So you mentioned Fantilli, right? In the AFP analytics projection, like at the end of the season, is somewhere around $10 million for Fantilli, maybe $10.5 million. Well, Leo Carlson's AFP analytics was $11.5 million on a long-term deal. He got $18 million. So putting down an offer sheet on Fantilli or negotiating an offer sheet with him, or even Columbus trying to get a contract with Fantilli, we're talking $15 million. Is that like what this pressure cooker is going to create in the next wave of either contract signings or offer sheets?
You know, before you even said $15 million, that's the number that popped into my head, because of those RFA centers, Bedard, Carlson, and Fantilli, he's the least developed of the three, let's say, right? Like, I think he's behind the other two. I think Carlson, especially when you look at his first quarter of the season and his postseason, it was like, there's that game-breaking talent that you know that he has. Yeah. Bedard, we've seen it in flashes. He works on his skating. The shooting is so much better. You're like, okay, there he is. Fantilli's the one that's a little bit behind the other two. So you're betting a little bit more on his projection versus his actual value right now. So I think that allows a team to go lower than, say, the $18 million mark. At worst, again, Columbus can match it. Force them to. If not, yeah, you're getting someone who now take out of that Blue Jackets environment and see what he can do, because we've seen flashes of it from Fantilli. We saw it when he jumped up on that top line with guys like Marchenko. You know, he, I think, just kept up, complimented them, and you saw his game start to blossom versus, you know, playing a little lower in the lineup and not with as great of wingers. So I think 15 kind of makes sense. Yes, you're overpaying, but if you're going to overpay for anyone, pay for these, you know, budding stars who are not even in the primes of their career yet, because then you're signing a contract that's that perfect window for them. And don't go 8 years. Go for 5 or 6, because it allows them to cash in again, but it's also less of a commitment for you in case he doesn't work out as well.
It's too bad the Hawks have $29 million in cap space, because obviously they will match whatever. But, like, if you're Vancouver, why wouldn't you do this? Why put your fan base through the pain of however many more months and years it might take to turn it around? Like, just sign the kid.
Yep. Like, why not? Imagine, why not try?
You go over Leo Carlson say we'll give you 19 a year for 5 years?
Of course, you would max for Bedard. That's what I'm saying.
Like, I think you got to go like 20. Well, I mean, think you got to go 20 million and just really throw curveballs.
They would still obviously have to move out because they've got like 17 right now. But yeah. Still, anyway, it would be fun.
It would be. I'm here for it.
It's so funny. The first thing I thought of when you said Anaheim should, you know, consider moving off of Killorn, I thought, oh, he can stay in the area and sign with the Kings because his age is perfect for them at 36. Now, they don't have enough cap space for Alex Killorn, but can the Kings get older between now and opening night?
He's a spring chicken if he goes there. You look at who they sign this offseason, okay? Like, and it's funny because, yes, Eric Halla gives them another center. Yes, he can kill penalties and stuff, but he also takes a ton of penalties. I wouldn't be betting on that. Corey Perry, was he effective there? Can he still be a pest in front of the net? Is he a playoff player? He still has all of those things. The only, like, older contract, the 35-plus deal that I liked for them was the Zuccarello contract because he still got game, and that's still below his market value, even when you account for all of the performance bonuses within it. That is a team that has their habits. That's why Brant Clark, to me, was an offer sheet candidate, and they were smart, and they got it done early, and I think that contract's going to age really well because I think he's a rising star. But they were one of, you know, I wrote a story on 6 offer sheet candidates, and 5 of them have been traded already, except for Clark. He was the only one that wasn't. He was actually extended. But when you account for management's tendencies, and it might have seemed wild to say someone could get Brant Clark out of LA, and it's like, well, they tend to go for older guys. And you look at what they did last offseason and the Dumoulin of it all and the Cody Ceci of it all. This is what Ken Holland does. And then he turns around, does one good step, and then signs all of these old guys. And you're like, what are we doing here? They're this one team that just stays in limbo when it's like so self-inflicted and so unnecessary.
And their goaltending tandem is like a 36 and 33-year-old. So
they were going to move.
They have done it perfectly. Like, yeah. They are old at all positions. It's quite remarkable.
I actually had the whole domino prep on the table thinking Bobrovsky could go to L.A. They have to move Darcy Kemper
out. Which also
out.
Would have been appropriate age-wise.
Appropriate
yes.
age oh, and yeah. all of it. Perfect. Didn't happen. So what comes in next? An offer sheet or a trade when we're looking at Hellebuck or everybody else that's available? Is Danny Briere putting another, you know, phone call to other players and say, let's work an offer sheet? Or is this more of a trade that you see happening around the National Hockey League?
It's a tough one because I do think Philly should keep taking this route because I really do think they're 1C away from being good, and an offer sheet's going to be the best way to land a player that's within their age range, that they, you know, that lines up with their timeline. I don't think anybody else on the market does. And even if you just threaten to offer sheet, we see that facilitate trades. It does with guys like Sam Skevich and Zellweger, right? Like, all of these players are traded because then, you know, you get a little more control on the return and you don't face the threat of an offer sheet, and it works out for both sides. We saw it last summer with Kendra Miller. The threat of an offer sheet from the Canes helps facilitate a deal. So if you're Briere, why not keep threatening? Now, at a certain point, if you get denied so many times, it'll look like, oh, it's desperation. I still wouldn't view it as such because the players are signing the contracts. You know, it's not desperation if the team matches. Mm-hmm. It's they're desperate because they couldn't come to a deal sooner. So I think that would be fun, but I do think the answer is going to be a trade. I think we'll see some sort of deal drop on like a Friday night in July when we're all trying to move on with our lives and enjoy our offseason, and it's going to be like, here's something really spicy. Connor Hellebuck has been moved, or the Dylan Larkin deal is finally done, or something happens with Nikishin, and it's just something like kind of out of left field, but not. I think we see that happen first before any other offer sheets develop, but I am hopeful, even with 2 being matched right now, that they still get used. I hope this doesn't like scare general managers off, like, oh, what's the point? Oh, now we're off seat, you know, our money's tied up for a week because right. we're waiting for the other team to match. But we're at the point of the offseason where I think you can afford to do that.
Humor me with a minute of rapid fire silliness. Pittsburgh, okay. $17 million in cap space. Is it enough room for both Robertsons?
Yes. I think there's money they can move out.
One's making $800,000. The other one's making $15
million. Nick's going to get more than $800,000. Larkin will end up where?
Minnesota.
DeBrincat will end up where?
Ooh, this is a good one because I feel like there's more teams that could use him. Huh, you've stumped me for a second.
Okay, we can come back like Family Feud style.
Yeah.
Summer of Shea. Yeah. Were you happy with Ryan Shea's 5-year, $4 million deal in Edmonton?
Great deal. I thought he could have gotten more when you look at the price of defensemen. I know he's unproven, and he definitely is, and some of his comps are a little scary, but I really like him, so I think that's a good deal.
And Nashville, are they any better than they were? They have six new forwards.
They have a lot of forwards. I'm going to say yes, because I do think the vision, yes, it's a lot of let's take former Avs players, but I also think that front office already you're seeing kind of diversify, add in different perspectives, load up on like an analytics staff, which has helped the Avs over the years. Trotz was one of the biggest letdowns as general manager. I think they're in a better position because they have better leadership.
And do you have an answer for DeBrincat?
You know what? How about Nashville? How about Nashville? Not? Because they didn't go the rebuild route, right? Like, they're not doing that, and they're getting players in this right now zone. But you look at them and go, you need another difference maker. Yeah. Why not just load up on all the goal scorers? Especially because Forsberg, I feel like we saw him kind of defer to more of a playmaking role last year. If you think that's the future for him and you want, you know, a next wave for Steven Stamkos, yes, he can still score a ton of goals, but it's in very specific usage. Why not go for DeBrincat there? That one makes sense. I think someone like LA should be in on him, but he's too young.
Duffer asked me earlier in the show, Patrick Kane, Buffalo or Chicago?
I say just go back to Chicago. I think the Sabres can look for someone a little younger and a little different. I don't know if I would love that one here. I get it, the whole like veteran hometown vibe of it, but I feel like the Sabres could go on a different route. Maybe they should be in on DeBrincat. I like that one better.
Yeah.
How hot is this take? The Rangers will end up higher than the Islanders and the Devils in the Metro.
Yep.
I'm going to give you a 7 out of 10. I think they'll end up higher than the Islanders. That's a team. There you go. That's the team for DeBrincat. That's what it should be. I don't understand what Matthew Darche is doing. I felt like that retool got off to a great start and then just went completely off the rails at the deadline. I don't understand what they did then. I don't understand their offseason. Very underwhelmed there. The Devils, I think, are a better team than the Rangers, but I think Shesterkin can steal them more points than their goaltending situation can. Right now, it looks like they're money-pucking the goalie situation. Don't hate that for them, but, you know, like, game-breaker.
The Devils are money-pucking the goalies. They're not money-pucking anything. They don't have anybody.
That's just it. They're like, let's load guys up on a bunch of guys and figure it out. And I'm like, all right. Yeah, I still think they have another move.
They got to do. All right, Shayna, thank you. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Follow her work. It's awesome. We're back after this. It's our final show of the week.
Yes.
Coming up on Sabres Live.
We're all on this planet together. So join Odyssey and find your one thing. Don't buy plastic toys for your pet. Look for either natural materials like cotton, rope, wood, or bamboo. Join Odyssey, and together, each of us doing one thing makes a greener tomorrow. What's your one thing?
Leo Carlson remains a Duck. The offer sheet was matched. Marty's World Cup update in 43 seconds or less.
Okay, France and Morocco today at 4 p.m. Tomorrow, Spain and Belgium at 3. And then Saturday, two matches, I should say. Norway, England at 5. And Argentina, Switzerland at 9 p.m.
Give us the winners of Wimbledon this weekend.
Okay, well, the women's final is not set yet. So right now,
I'm just Maria asking Kutsia, for a winner.
I am going to say Muchova. I think that's how you said the Czech girl that beat Coco Gauff this morning.
I'm
did
sorry,
not want to say that in front of Shayna Goldman.
No, you didn't want to.
She was in the middle of Coco's match, still watching.
Shayna was in our long list of guests this week. If you missed Louis Crevier, Beck Malenstein, Mark Pesic, they're all available on Sabres YouTube. And we hope you enjoy seeing World Cup and Wimbledon this weekend. Obviously, we're looking forward to next week. From the Sabre goaltender alumni category.
Oh, yes.
Ryan Vince will be joining the show.
Insanity is going to be joining the show.
There's a million people, okay, maybe a few less than that, in Western New York that have Vinzy jerseys. Remember the T-shirt jersey?
Yes, there was the T-shirt jersey. There was jerseys. I was at that game against San Jose when the whole Miller trade happened and Jonas Enrod played. And you know what I'm doing tomorrow for the first time? This summer?
Getting ready to have Griffin Della Penna on the show next week?
No, but I can talk to Griffin or Danny Gare about what I'm doing tomorrow.
What?
Because they're big, avid golfers, and I'm going to golf for the first time tomorrow.
You look so tanned. I assumed you've been out on the links already.
I've been cutting the grass and doing yard work and making an extended run for my chickens and all of that. So, yes. But, yeah, golfing tomorrow for the first time.
I've not heard you mention the chicken coop for a long time. You did extended work on that 2 years ago.
Oh,
how's
it
holding up?
It's holding up really good.
Better than your plumbing, typically?
If the plumbing holds up for 24 hours, it holds up for 24 years. That's the problem. But this has been good. And now I'm just extending their area in the woods. I'm fencing it in, putting a net over so that there's no...
retractable dome? Is that what you're telling me?
It's the Sky Dome, basically. Yes, it's the Sky Dome. They're well protected.
Did you know that former Sabre David Kampf has signed?
No.
In Czechia.
So he was,
gone home to Litvinov.
He came over, obviously, in the Kessel Ring?
No.
No? In what trade? Tuck trade. That's right. Washington, thank you, producer. Contract situation. They needed to shed a contract before July 1. That's what happened.
I'm looking forward to Amerks in Cleveland this year because I get to see one of my favorite netminders, Phoenix Copley, who has replaced Fedotov as the goaltender with the Monsters. Have a monster of a weekend. We'll see you Monday.